Then the Pharisees went and plotted how to trap him by what he said. They sent their disciples to him with the Herodians. "Teacher," they said, "we know that you are truthful and teach truthfully the way of God. You defer to no one, for you don't show partiality. Tell us, therefore, what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But perceiving their malice, Jesus said, "Why are you testing me, hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." So they brought him a denarius, whose image and inscription is this, he asked them.
Morning. We're going to continue our series we titled The Crimes of Jesus of Nazareth. And the basic concept of the series has been a look at the kind of last half of the book of Matthew. And we're trying to figure out what went wrong, if you want to term it that way, that people seem to like Jesus early on in Matthew's gospel. In fact, when you get to that Sunday when Jesus enters the city of Jerusalem, people are throwing down their coats. They're excited that he's here. Hosanna to the Son of David. And then a week later, there's a different mob with a different chant, "Crucify him, crucify him, give us Barabbas," and so forth. And we wonder what it is that happened. What makes Jesus crucifiable? What makes him lynchable, murderable? Why would somebody want to kill this man? And remember that in the gospel, the person you identify with the most are the people saying, "Crucify him, crucify him." Right? We're not the good guys in the story. We are on the sinner side of the story. And Jesus is here to save us. We are the people, at least in some respect, responsible for that. And so we wonder, what is it that I find unpalatable about Jesus? What does Jesus have to say to me that would make me feel this kind of anger towards him? In Matthew chapter 22, verses 15 through 22, we're going to see another crime of Jesus of Nazareth, something else that he does that's going to upset people pretty good. Beginning in verses 15 through 17, when some folks get together and decide to lay a trap. Then the Pharisees went and plotted how to entangle him in his words. And they sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God truthfully. And you do not care for anyone's opinion, and you are not swayed by appearances. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" Oh my, what a little passage that is. So just a word of understanding here about ministers and the way we think. I love compliments. I mean, everybody does. Everybody likes to be complimented, right? I mean, that's nice. I think we all like somebody to say, attaboy. Yvonne put in the church bulletin a few weeks back about Minister's Appreciation Day, and several of you took it very seriously and wrote me a little note or put a sticky note in my desk or something and said something nice. I thought, well, that was fantastic. I kept them and put them on my little board. It was really nice and refreshing to hear that. I appreciate every one of them. But the way preachers are trained is when people start in like that, we immediately think, what's about to happen next? Here it comes, right? That we start to get a little nervous, a little paranoid. And it's because of passages like this, right? Because they come to Jesus, "Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God truthfully." And you take a step back and you say, what's about to happen? Because that's not at all what you think, is it? And he, the sarcasm almost that comes across in that just gushing, overflowing, syrupy kind of compliment to Jesus. "Oh, we think so highly of you." Ignore what we said yesterday. "We think so highly of you." Yeah, we said if you come to Jerusalem, we'll kill you. "But we think so highly of you. We would just like for you to answer this one little question." Couldn't hurt. Couldn't make anybody angry. Just a simple question. It's an easy one. Are we supposed to pay taxes to Caesar? And the way they word it is a carefully, perfectly constructed trap. And you may be familiar with this little scenario, but let me just kind of play it out for you a little bit. So you have Jewish folks in Palestine, grew up on their family's land. It's been taken from them. It belongs to Romans, and they pay Roman taxes, and they work on Roman fields, and they have been unmoored from their heritage. Okay. And there's some folks in Israel who say this is just the way that it is, and we have to play along. In fact, this might be a great opportunity. We'll help collect the taxes. And so some of them start participating with the Roman government, and in process of that, become the most hated people in Palestine. One of the most common phrases in the gospel is tax collectors and sinners, right? It just goes hand in hand, basically the same people. Tax collectors and sinners, traitors, thieves, and sinners. That's what they were, okay? So that's one group. But then another group, you have the zealots, who not only don't believe in getting along with Rome, they would be perfectly content and work actively each day for the violent overthrow of all Roman authority in Palestine. Bringing into it, we'll pay taxes after Pilate's head is on a pike outside the gate. A violent, radical approach to their situation. And so the question, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? Has all of that built into it. It's a no-win question. It's the kind of thing, when a president gets asked a question like this during a campaign, he says, you know, we got lots of great ideas on this. We're studying this one out. We'll have something to you. That's what you say. You don't answer that question. You spin it around and you go somewhere else because what a trap that has to be. There was no right answer. And the word lawfully, which law are we even talking about? Are we going to follow the law of the land, the law of Rome? Does the law of Moses trump that, which says that that's our land and our kingdom? Is it lawful? So they butter him up, they lay it on thick, and then they lay this little trap and they walk away. A little snare made of civic duty and public opinion. Jesus, first of all, rebukes them. Because he sees what's going on here. He is not going to have anything pulled over on him. He is not unaware. There's so many lessons in today's lesson, but just to pause for a moment, folks, take compliments lightly. My earliest preaching mentor, and this is true for any walk of life, but my earliest preaching mentor said, don't believe anything nice they say about you. And what he meant by that was, not that you're all liars, you are, but no, not because you're all liars, but because you don't want to be distracted by compliments to the point where you start to believe your own good press. Always dangerous. Keep a level head. That's what we tell our kids. Jesus even goes a step further than that. He knows behind the buttery words is deceit, or what he calls it, hypocrisy. Read verse 18. But Jesus, aware of their malice, and I love that word, that they aren't just being tricky here, they are being hateful. They want his ruin. Aware of their malice, said, why put me to the test, you hypocrites? And why does he call them hypocrites? That's not a throwaway word. He uses it so often in regards to this anger, but people, we forget that there's a meaning to it. It means a couple of things here. One we're going to get to later, but one that's obvious. First of all, that they had masked their hateful intent behind compliments, the very method of their question. He says, you haven't fooled me at all. I know what you're doing. But furthermore, because they had no interest in the answer to their question. Okay? Questions end in question marks. This one ended, I think, in an exclamation point in their minds. gotcha, right? I mean, that's the way they see this. We've asked a question, but they're not really looking for information. They aren't saying, Jesus, we really don't understand. Please explain the intersection of civic law and moral law to us. We would really like to know. We have our tax forms here, and we're just not sure. They have no interest in the answer. They have only interest in the downfall of Jesus in the eyes of the public, with whom he's been altogether too popular of late. Hosanna to the Son of David. Hypocrites. But I want to suggest to you there's one more reason he calls them hypocrites. And when he uses the word hypocrites for this third reason, he's talking about you and me too. Because right at the heart of this question is a deep-rooted human hypocrisy. Listen to his answer, beginning in verse 19. Show me the coin for the tax. And they brought him a denarius. And Jesus said to them, whose likeness and inscription is this? And they said, Caesar's. Straightforward response. What does he say? He says, this might be a simpler question than you want to know. Take out some of the money that we have in question and just take a look at it. What does its appearance tell you? Ancient practice, very much like modern practice. This isn't something strange. I've got one of those in my pocket, I think. Yep, I do keep some of these once in a while. My, that's a $5 bill. Abraham Lincoln. Okay, there we go. What does an image tell us? It tells us about ownership. It tells us about identity. When you say that my son Lucas is a chip off the old block, he looks just like Ben. He acts just like Ben. That's usually what you say when he's in trouble. He acts just like his dad. What you're saying is, I see the connection there. I see that that one belongs to this one. That's Ben's boy. That's what your wife means when she says, your son did the following, right? She's saying, I see you right there, and you're responsible for this. The image shows ownership. Do you know why my picture is not on the $5 bill? I know you wonder about that a lot. It keeps you up late at night. Why haven't they made some currency yet with Ben's picture on it? And the answer is because it doesn't belong to me. That's the subtle message. The subtle message on every coin, on every dollar bill, on every piece of currency, is that this isn't actually yours. There's a face on it. That's what Caesar was doing. Caesar put his face on the coin. This isn't actually yours. This actually belongs to me. Do you recognize it for what it is? Can you see the image? And they can. They can go that far, right? They can pick up the coin and they recognize. They don't say. Now, this is funny. Think about this a minute. Had any of these people ever met Caesar? This is what's funny about this when you think about it. This is in a world before television. Right? If I say, describe to me the appearance of Donald Trump, you've never met the man, but you can tell me what he looks like because we see him on television. We see our leaders, our presidents, our governors, foreign leaders, important figures. On a regular basis, we know what they look like. You can tell me what he looks like. These folks had never, ever seen a television screen with Octavius on it or Augustus or Nero or any of the figures that would inhabit the first century world. But they knew who that was. They knew who was on the coin. They knew what it meant. This is your emperor. This is his image on your money. It belongs to him. And they actually understood that. They had to be reminded of it. But they did actually understand that. Who owns your money? This is an unsettling thought, and I hate to break it to you. But the face on the front is a reminder that it doesn't belong to you. It's the great lie of economics. That they hand you this and they say, see, this is yours. You can do what you want with this. We're just going to put my face on the front. Is it yours? Oh, it's mine. I can tear it in half? I'm breaking a law if I go around shredding currency. You know why? It's not actually mine. It doesn't actually belong to me. And we could tell ourselves. We live our whole lives thinking we've accumulated this money and we got it and it's ours. And every dollar bill says, not really. Yeah, but my stuff is mine. Is it really? My house is mine. My land is mine. Really? Stop paying your property taxes and see how much it belongs to you. Uncle Sam will come and remind you it never yours in the first place. There's a part of it that's his every year, and you'll pay it or you won't have it. Well, my income is mine. Really? Stop paying your income tax. See how much of your income is yours. Every year, every April, somebody comes along with a form and reminds you exactly how much of what you think is yours is his. And that's literally the question they're asking. They're asking about taxes. It was never yours to start with. And to remind you of that, somebody stuck their face on the front so you couldn't miss the point. So listen now where Jesus goes with this point. At the end of verse 21, therefore render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God. If the image of Caesar, or of Ben Franklin, or Abraham Lincoln, or George Washington, tells you who that belongs to, is there another image we should have noticed? See, I don't think this is about politics. A lot of folks do. They read this passage and they're looking for political theory. How much of my life belongs to the government? How much of it belongs to God? And do I need to separate it, or do I need to put it together, or how does this work? I don't think it's about that at all. It's about ownership. A deeper concern. Who owns this? Caesar says, I do. That belongs to me. And Jesus says, sure. If it's got his face on it, it's his. Give it to him. But do you know before Caesar ever breathed a breath, somebody else put his face on humanity? Every human being is made in the image of God. Why is it we can look at a dollar bill and recognize a president, but we can't look in the mirror and recognize we belong to the creator of the universe? That's the hypocrisy that Jesus is talking about. The whole question was rooted in, this stuff belongs to me, do I have to give it to Caesar? Jesus says, are you kidding? None of it ever belonged to you. Caesar doesn't even belong to Caesar. If you find anything that legitimately belongs to Caesar, you give it to Caesar. But every dollar and every hillside house and every cattle and every human person and every fiber of existence is stamped indelibly with the mark of its creator, and it belongs to him. And you haven't given him what belongs to him. You serve your God like you pay your taxes. And how do we pay taxes? Oh, I'm so excited about tax season this year. I'm going to give them as much as I possibly can. No, we don't do that. Because deep down inside, we think it's our money. And so we want to give Uncle Sam as little of it as possible. And deep down inside, we think the same way about our lives. This is my life. It belongs to me, and I will give to God the minimum I can get away with. If I can find a tax shelter for my moral life, I'll do it. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. But wherever you see the stamp of the Almighty God, you make sure that goes to God, and every bit of it belongs to him. And when they heard this, verse 22, they marveled. And they left him and went away. Why? Because nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to hear and be told, you don't belong to you. We want to be told, this is your life, go live it to the fullest, do what you want. And Jesus says, it was never yours to start with. You are fighting over things that aren't yours to begin with. You belong to the Lord your God, and you're not rendering to him your due. What is the crime of Jesus of Nazareth today? The third charge against Jesus in this series is that he told us that we are no more our own than our money is. We belong to God. Today you need to look deeply into your life and ask yourself what part of it you have kept back. What loophole you have found to hide portions of your life from the Almighty. He has stamped it all with his image. There is not a single inch of this universe over which God does not say, mine. Look at your life and make sure it belongs to him and you're treating it that way. you've not believed in his son and begun a life in his service, this is the time and place to do so. As we stand and sing, won't you come?